You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Listeners, just to let you know, I mean, John and I care about you a lot because we're currently recording this at like 6 in the morning, on the weekend, on a Saturday.
Saturday morning, post-birthday celebrations.
Yeah. John was having fun last night. But, and he's got to travel like the next, like, 2 hours.
For my birthday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, happy birthday.
Oh,
you didn't tell me it was your birthday.
My birthday's tomorrow, yeah.
Oh, okay, all right, well... I would have figured it out eventually. But yeah, happy birthday. I didn't get you anything.
Thank you.
I get my well wishes. I'll get you something later.
You got me. We are Air episode 11.
Episode 11. Yes, welcome everyone. This, of course, as John just said, is We Are Air. I am Chris Herman, and the other person who's been speaking, of course, is John Romo. And we're here to talk about all kinds of video game news and video game nonsense. And like we said, that we care about you because it's... We're recording this so early in the morning because it's just been such a busy week. But let's just get right into the news, John. So apparently, a new report by Nikkei claims Sony Interactive Entertainment is planning to release 5 or more mobile games around the end of March 2018. According to the report, Sony will release new games based on pre-existing PlayStation properties, as well as older games that haven't been ported to its current hardware. The games will also be connectable to consoles, similar to PlayStation Vita's cross-play functionality. Nikkei says titles currently in development will likely be announced later this year and will target Japan and other Asian territories. The mobile company ForwardWorks will distribute the games. No information about what properties will be used or if the games will be exclusive to a particular company such as Apple or Android was given. Sony will be joining Nintendo in the mobile market, which announced last March it had partnered with the company DNA to develop smartphone games featuring Nintendo characters. Just last month, Nintendo announced its mascot will be coming to iOS in the form of Super Mario Run. So, I mean, this isn't too surprising. I mean, Sony, we've heard rumors that Sony was going to definitely start developing for the mobile market. And the other thing is that with the fact that their most recent handheld, the Vita, has been less than successful, it doesn't surprise me that they're like, okay, let's go to mobile devices to port some of our games. And I imagine they're going to start small.
Yeah, I think it's a smart play, honestly. Like, Sony has to sort of follow what Nintendo's doing. Mm. Also, like the fact that it says Japan and other Asian territories, that's a very smart play because that's all Japan kind of is this mobile first, handheld first sort of situation. And just to test the waters there first before they bring it out here, because if the casual market is what does mobile, I always get it confused too, mobile v handheld. I just like handhelds are mobile.
It's like handheld is not a phone. That's how I kind of think of it.
I just always hear
I think of like a handheld, like a Game Boy type device.
Okay, yeah. When I think mobile, I just think not console because you can be mobile with it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just think it's a really smart play. What characters are they going to use? It's easy for Nintendo because they use the same cast of characters throughout every console generation. But like, you could do an Uncharted Temple Run and stuff, or a fun little Crash Bandicoot. You just make a Crash Bandicoot game, really.
That would be so sad if, like, it's like weird cyclical nonsense where, you know, Uncharted would become a Crash Bandicoot game. That'd just be a sad day. That'd be like, what is this series coming to? Especially after Uncharted 4.
Oh, brilliant.
Which we both reviewed recently. Check that out. But, yeah, I mean, if I had to think of, like, any PlayStation mascots to put on, like, a mobile device, maybe, like, Ratchet and Clank. Maybe Sly Cooper. Like
something kind of the PlayStation 2 era.
Yeah, really, yeah. Something like kind of cartoony.
Jack and Daxter.
And they're not particularly... I mean, they're not... Yeah, Jack and Daxter. They're not doing anything with Jack and Daxter. They're not doing anything with Sly Cooper. Ratchet and Clank may be off limits because the most recent game, which I played a while back, was very, very good.
So the remake of the first one?
The remake. It was the remake of the first one, which was also based on the movie. And they constantly kept talking about that in the game.
Really?
So, yeah. But I think that they're going to kind of go for the more maybe cartoony characters. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to see... You know, like an infamous mobile game where you're playing as Cole or that other guy who I can't remember.
Well, it's also interesting because, I don't know how much Japan would care about an infamous or an Uncharted situation.
That's a.
I'm not really sure how those play though. Those are much more Western focused. I think the character stuff, like a Jack and Dexter or a Sly Cooper, maybe that works more. Although those are all Western developed games too. So
yeah,
I mean, I don't know really what kind of characters are Japan centric. Because even Crash Bandicoot was like the first time. Yeah. It was kind of weird that Crash Bandicoot had success and that Sony like gave it the push because it was like the first big Western developed game that they were like, this is a staple for the PlayStation.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we'll know in the next few months, but it's definitely a great question.
It does also make me think, what's Microsoft going to do? Because you can't, if both your competitors are doing this, you've got to realize like, I probably need to do this. And Microsoft has done a great job, and this is just a different aspect of the company, but like with their Office apps and stuff like that and supporting the other platforms outside of desktop, they've done a great job of doing cross-platform play, like that. And now that they're basically out of the phone market, I don't know anyone who has a Lumia.
Yeah,
I've
no,
never
no,
seen
knows,
a Lumia in the wild.
Yeah.
They can finally, I think, commit to software, which I think is what... Yeah. Their current their current CEO Satya Nadella, he's really about cloud first, mobile first, and I think the Xbox division is really one of their stronger consumer first facing consumer front sides of their business, and I think you got to make a play here. You never did handheld, so you kind of
I don't think they're getting that market. Yeah.
And I think they're the ones that have a lot of room, maybe for different types of games, shooters, different things like that, because that's just what I think Xbox is.
Yeah. Well, using it's the home of, you know, I mean, well, you can argue that it's not anymore.
The most Western.
It's the most Western of the consoles, certainly, and the types of games are certainly the most Western. I mean, I imagine that they would just put, like, some of their big... I mean, I think there was a whole Halo mobile game.
Yeah, Spartan Assault.
Spartan Assault, which is good, You know. So, I mean, I imagine they'll start to develop a few more mobile games, but... Continuing on with the PlayStation news, a number of PlayStation VR players have begun to report issues with the new virtual reality headset device, including an issue which causes the view within the VR headset to shift to the left during play. As rounded up in the Reddit thread, multiple PSVR users have encountered the center of view moving over time to the left as a result of the player's head moving, gradually forcing them to realign their position as their field of view shifts. Other Reddit users have reported various other issues, including a title screen view within the headset, gamers telling players that they are unable to detect their headsets, and more. And of course, you know, PlayStation VR released on October 13th, just a few days ago. And of course, there were, you know, previous copies out in the wild before, but first of all, I'm really not surprised to hear this. It's such a new type of device, and the fact that it has all these issues already, it's like, yeah, of course. I'm not surprised by that at all. And of course, recently a research firm predicted, an unnamed research firm predicted that Sony could sell upwards of 2 million units before the end of 2016. I find that a little, you know, unbelievable, personally, especially because, I mean, I've seen this thing marketed on TV, on the internet, and most of the time it's for, like, Battlefront VR, where you're in a, you know, X-Wing and things like that, but I don't know, I see, like, just a real lack of excitement for this. This device outside of just the regular gaming press who have used it consistently.
I think there's a lot of excitement in tech in general with this one in particular because of its consumer-facing sort of strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Like Oculus and Vive, better materials, like better products because they're just, you know...
It's so much expensive.
Yeah, they're so much more expensive though. And so it's hard to warrant that kind of purchase. But I've heard like... TheVerge.com, their editor, talk about how, like, yeah, I'll just get a PSVR. It's, like, $400, I think, $500 for the full bundle. Most people already have a PS4, so they're basically set. They just have to buy this add-on that's more than the console, but still.
Yeah, it was $400.
It's kind of no thought. You don't really have to, like, check specs. You don't have to check your setup. You don't... I don't know. It's just a lot easier for hookup and play, and I see that... That number, 2 million, it's, which, you know, I'm not really good with the numbers. I don't know how, for a math major, I don't know how, like, good the numbers relative. I don't know how good the Oculus is doing, how good the Vive is doing. I do know I went to a Best Buy recently to get Gears of War 4, and the Oculus had its own little booth. I wonder if Sony is going to put the time in to kind of, like, have that booth. I think, because the Oculus was also locked up, so what's the fucking point? I don't, like... I would love to see Sony set up kiosks in Best Buy or wherever, Target, I don't know, where it's like, hey, you can put this on, someone's watching it or something. Because it's, I haven't had any experience with VR, like, personally. I've seen what VR is capable of and, like, read articles about its ideas, but I've never gotten the headset on my head, and I think that's an important, like, threshold that you need to give consumers the opportunity to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I think in electronic stores, the PlayStation VR is also the easiest to do that. It's like, we have a PlayStation, just plug it in, plug this in, we're set to go.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, it's, I'm also not surprised by these issues either.
Mm-hmm.
It's very early tech. I think the article says titled, but I think it means tilted. Is that including a tilted screen view? So it's probably like...
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so throwing off your balance and everything. But, you know, we're in the early stages of VR. This is like the first inning of a baseball game right now. There's a long way to go, but it's still exciting to see that, like I said, someone is consumer first on this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my whole thing is that I just... VR is just not for me, at least so far from what I've experienced. I mean, I've used Oculus and stuff like that. I'm like, I don't like this. I don't like something on my head. The edges are all blurry. It's not clear. It's not clean looking. It's not crisp. I don't get it, personally. And maybe I just need more experience with it, but I'm not going to be buying a PlayStation VR, at least not anytime soon. And the other thing is, and I know this is not pointed out in the article, and you know, along with these issues, which I think are just like, yeah, it's part of the tech, but at the same time, it's like you're paying so much for this product. You want it to work. You know, right. You know, at least the first few times.
The basics.
Yes. Yeah. The games they had with it, I just like, I don't fucking care about any of this stuff.
You don't want to be in Arkham in VR?
No, that's the one game that looks cool, but apparently it's like a 1 hour experience. It's like,
no, yeah.
The game's getting longer.
I'm not interested in buying VR for another 3 years, probably. When it's, I need to give me something much cheaper with actual experiences. Mm. And they don't even need to be gaming experiences in general.
Yeah, it could be like a movie that I'm watching. I'm interacting.
Just something different. And I think it's going to take a couple years. One, for the tech to really get there.
Mm-hmm.
And for it to be easily approachable and easily sold.
Yeah.
But it's going to take even longer for, I think, developers to figure out this is what kind of thing works for VR. And it's going to take up a lot of experimentation. And along the way, we're going to have a lot of troubles like this. And we're going to have a lot of bad games, hour-long games that cost $30. We're going to have a bunch of weird stuff like that. But I think occasionally we'll get these kind of groundbreaking experiences. Like we saw the rise of the walking simulator with like Gone Home a couple of years ago. Weird new ways to tell stories like Her Story. I think games like that is what's going to be, like VR is going to have to figure out a way to do that sort of thing. And it's just going to take time. I don't really see much interesting coming from big name developers, honestly. I don't really like think they have the bandwidth to really commit to this sort of thing because right now it still seems like a side hobby.
Yeah, no, I agree. The only game that I think is going to be supposedly fully compatible with PSVR is Resident Evil 7, right? And so, but again, we don't know how it will work, if it will work very well. I'm not going to be playing 7.
Yeah, it's not a VR-only game, though, right?
No, it's not. That's a confusing thing. It's like, no, it's a VR-only game, so you can do it. It's like, I don't know.
So it sounds to me like, to really take advantage of VR, you're going to have to commit and be like, this is VR-only. Like, we thought about this from the beginning, because otherwise you're just making concessions, and you're like, well, I guess we'll add in this element.
And the problem is that you're just, because the audience for that is so small to begin with, and it's incredibly expensive. You know, making a game is incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
And so that's why these things are 1 hour long, because at least you're not spending
too much
money on a 12-hour experience. Yeah. So
I do really actually wonder how many people are going to play Resident Evil 7 in VR.
Yeah.
Because they're actually interested in Resident Evil 7 for VR, and not because, well, there's nothing else to play.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's very true. You're segmenting the market into VR people who have a PlayStation.
Yeah.
People who have a VR.
Yeah, exactly.
People who care about horror games. Mm-hmm. People who care about the seventh entry in a franchise
that suffered for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of subgroups.
Yeah, it's just, you're getting very niche at that point.
But moving on from that, some happy news. Activision Blizzard announced today that Overwatch has passed 20 million global players. This news comes just under 5 months after the game's release and a little over 2 months after the developer announced the game surpassed 15 million total players. It's worth noting this means that there are 20 million registered Overwatch accounts, not necessarily that the game has sold 20 million copies. While Blizzard hasn't released sales numbers for Overwatch, it was June's highest selling game, according to the NPD's numbers. Right now, actually, Overwatch is they're hosting their first PvE event, which is Halloween Terror, which is now available for players to enjoy. I mean, this isn't very surprising to me. I mean, Overwatch has just continued to be just a powerhouse, one of the most popular multiplayer games on this generation of consoles. And I understand why, having finally been able to play it, when I had the time. It's just so much fun. And even though you can say, like, a lot of this stuff is repetitive to a certain extent, like, there's not as many modes as you probably would want, I still just find myself gravitating towards it because I can jump into it for maybe, like, 20 minutes and, you know, get a few matches in. It's just so easy to do it as compared to a lot of other, you know, multiplayer games. But, I mean, John, what do you think? Both of them, just the amount of, you know, supposedly 20 million registered players, but also just, you know, your experiences with Overwatch right now.
I'm wondering really what the... Not necessarily that the game has sold 20 million copies, but it's 20 million registered players. So yes. Is that just... There would be a discrepancy between people who rented it, played it for 3 days, yes. Got an account. Okay, that's what I was wondering. I was like, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm. That's what that means, yeah.
Okay. I'm not really surprised by this either. I think Activision Blizzard has really gotten it down to... They're very focused. They're a very focused company, put a lot of work into what they do.
Yeah.
So I think it really comes through. Wow. Diablo had some trouble, but StarCraft, and then I think Hearthstone was the big one for me.
That card game, people love that
shit.
It's
so weird. It's so simple, but it's very well thought out underneath the surface, and there's a lot to dig into. And I think there's a lot to dig into with Overwatch. At its base level, it is a Team Fortress clone, but there's a lot much more.
It's a better clone.
it's a much better version of Team Fortress 2. There's a lot more character. There's a lot more thought. And I love seasonal events. I've been off of Overwatch for a week or two just because playing Uncharted 4.
Yeah, so many other games.
Yeah, I got Doom and then Gears of War. But yeah, having something like this event will make me want to jump back in. I will say the one problem, though, is opposite of what you said about it's really easy for you to jump in and play a game or two, it's very hard for me to do that.
Okay.
Just because the random people you meet online don't necessarily have a strategy or everyone wants to be the same kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... I don't know, it's... When I play with my friends, one of us is like, yeah, I'll be a tank and I'll be a support and, like, you can be the run-and-gun shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it... On the one hand, it lets you be who you want to be because you communicate with your friends.
Yeah.
It's a much better game with communication.
Sure.
And I think it also forces you to, in a safer environment, experiment. Because, like, my friends have had more experience with the game than me. They're, like, several levels ahead of me. So when they're like, yeah, just try out a support guy, I'll be the running gun, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
And it's... So it's harder for me to jump into it and be like, well, who am I communicating with? Like, these randoms... Just... Ever since the invention of the party chat, it's just random games haven't been as fun. Because no one's talking, no one really cares to communicate. So it's a little harder for me to jump into in that sense. But I want to see how this is going to continue to grow against once the big dogs come in, Call of Duty, Battlefield. We'll see. I wonder how it's going to, like, stand up.
That will be interesting to see, like, how it competes against those games. I think it has its audience. I don't know if... I mean,
Do you think it has legs, though? Because then we've also got Gears. We've also got Gears coming up.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, Gears... Yeah, it certainly is a multiplayer component, but I think a lot of people are just going to play it for the campaign, in all honesty.
Really think so?
I think so. I think that the Gears audience is different from the Call of Duty, the Battlefield, even the Overwatch audience. I really do. I think people are... Yeah, they certainly play the multiplayer. I play the multiplayer. I'm a big Gears fan. But the big thing I like to play is always the campaign. Because I think that's the best part. That and Horde mode. I think Horde mode as well.
I've never really gotten into
it. Oh, man. I mean, it's the birthplace. It was the birthplace of Horde mode there. And how that... And that's getting... We'll be getting into our main topic today, which is all about Gears of War. But, I mean, Gears had such an impact where it just kind of... birthed a new kind of gameplay or game mode with Horde mode. So I love it. But no, I mean, with in regards to Overwatch, I'm not surprised to see this again. There's so many registered players of the game, and I haven't been able to play recently. Or like this past week, but I definitely want to check out like this Halloween Terror event, because the costumes I've seen are so cool. But continuing on with more Activision news, it's the end of the Chilton era for World of Warcraft. After a decade of overseeing one of the biggest games ever made, World of Warcraft director Tom Chilton is leaving. The designer announced in a blog that he is stepping down from the lead role in Blizzard's massively multiplayer online role-playing game, now that Legion, the latest expansion, has launched. But Chilton isn't done at Blizzard. He revealed that he is sticking with the company and is now working on something new. The director worked on Warcraft since 2004, and he was key to turning it into one of the most popular and lucrative hits in the history of the 99.6 billion gaming industry. It's with a mix of excitement, sadness, and gratitude that I'm saying farewell to the WoW team and moving on to a new adventure within Blizzard, Chilton wrote in a message on the Blizzard forum. My personal journey working on WoW as game director is at an end, but my journey with Blizzard isn't. I'll still be here, but we'll be focusing on another project within the company. Chilton also announced that Ion Hazikostas, lead game designer, hope I'm saying that right, lead game designer on World of Warcraft, will take over as director. Hazikostas has worked on WoW for 8 years, and he is responsible for many of the raid bosses and other major encounters. I know that while being great hands with Ion at the helm, wrote Chilton, he's been an integral part of the team for more than 8 years and has contributed to so many aspects of the game's development, from class design to encounter design and nearly everything in between. He also has an amazing team at his side, the same epic crew that brought you all the content you're enjoying in Legion. World of Warcraft was long Blizzard's crown jewel, but it's currently entering its twilight in its life. It peaked in 2010 with 12 million subscribers, and it has since dwindled to less than half of that. Although the publisher no longer releases the figures for how many people pay for a monthly membership, WoW still generates millions of dollars in revenue every month. Fans still have wondered whether Blizzard will replace it with something new. And of course, they kind of go on to say, talking about some other types of Blizzard projects. But I mean, first of all, to Mr. Chilton, obviously the work that he did with WoW, you know, again changing, just showing the power of MMO, specifically with World of Warcraft, and you know, he built a gaming empire with WoW. Certainly, he was made one of the major people that helped establish that empire. So, and even with my own experience of WoW, is very limited. I still enjoyed my time with it, which was that 2 week free trial. But I mean, John, what do you think of Chilton's kind of work with World of Warcraft and just like your kind of experiences with the game itself?
Well, yeah. First off, congrats and well done to Mr. Chilton for his work with the the franchise, that game. I don't like MMOs. I don't like WoW. It's not like my steez.
No, I get it.
I've played maybe three different free trials just to like try and get into it.
Yeah, same.
And it's like, I get it. Like, I get why people would
You're a
like
guy, you'd like it.
Like, it's like, I get why people would like this, but 10 years is the longest time.
It is.
Keep playing again. I don't get it. I just don't get it. There's so many other games to play, I think, is my thing. I cannot commit that to one single game. But I think is to be the director of a game like this, and a lot of credit to him because it's still going.
Yep.
And that's crazy. Mm-hmm. And the game has had the ability, whether you like it or not, to cross over into the mainstream, to be the subject of a South Park episode. One of the best South Park episodes
I've ever seen. Make love, not Warcraft.
Yeah. Right. And to really make headlines, make waves, and be, when someone says MMO, you think World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
It's, who remembers EverQuest? Who remembers, whatever else is besides EverQuest? I think there's an Elder Scrolls Online somewhere.
Yeah. No, it is. It's still going.
And it's just, to me, also, when I'm like, if I'm going to play an MMO, I'll probably just play WoW. Yeah. Even though I know I'm never going to play one, I'm just like, if I were to play one, it'd probably be the one that has, like, 12 years of content all up in it. And I didn't even know there was another one. I didn't know there was another expansion or whatever that is. Legion?
Oh, Burning Legion, I think it's called.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were still going. I remember there was a Kung Fu Panda one.
Yeah, there was a Kung Fu Panda. Yeah, it came out. That was ridiculous. It's like, you're okay. They probably went, because I think they came out like right around Kung Fu Panda, and they probably went, shit. They're as big as a joke. But yeah, I mean, my 2 week experience of WoW was fun, or however long it was, a 1 week experience, and I made a undead rogue named Cargill, and it was an enjoyable time. But again, it's like I personally can't sink 10 hours into that type of game. But
I think what always gets me is you see the wonderful marketing, the beautiful CGI, trailers and everything. Then you said the game, it looks like it's from 2006.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy.
It looks like Hot Garbage.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate at least, you know, they consistently made improvements to the game for over a decade. And obviously, Chilton was a major contributor to that. So, again, congratulations to him and just his entire career there.
Do you think Blizzard will go into a new MMO once this is kind of wrapped up?
Because
with him leaving, it kind of feels like, okay, we're kind of on the downtrend. Like, it has been losing players. There's an end point at some point, right?
I think it has to be. I mean, eventually, like, there will be, I mean, because they're not publishing, like, the how many what players are currently there, or how many subscribers they currently have, I should say, monthly memberships. And I think that's very telling, because they know it's probably a lot lower than, mm-hmm. I think, maybe even most people expect. So I would think that they would probably wrap this up by 2020. Like, I think this is it. And then they will announce their new MMO, whether it be like a World of Warcraft 2, or whether it be maybe the long, like rumored, like StarCraft MMO. I forget what it was called. It's like StarCraft Ghost. Or something
I don't see that happening. I see either new franchise or different.
Completely
something
different.
I see them. What I love about them is like very distinct franchises, but they don't really intersect.
True.
Because they're like teams are very focused on this is my thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to cross over into the other thing. And I think it allows them to build several brands at once.
Yeah.
It's just, does it have methods of monetization like a Hearthstone or Overwatch? Because I think also, for Blizzard's sake, they would want to, you know, reframe that and like redo how the game would be monetized for the future. Even you saying 2020, that's still 3 years away. Like, that's a crazy long time for this game to be limping along. And I wonder how much revenue they are still making. I wonder how profitable these people are. Yeah?
If Activision is happy with it, then, you know, because that's all they care about is money. So, but continuing on with the MMO news, Star Wars The Old Republic Knights of the Eternal Throne trailer was released. It's the sixth digital expansion from the BioWare MMO. And the expansion will be released, this upcoming December, in celebration of the game's 5-year anniversary. The story will continue from the previous expansion, Knights of the Fallen Empire.
Ooh, I'm excited for this synopsis. Go ahead.
With the Outlander leading the alliance against the forces of Empress Valene. Accompanied by 3 subscriber awards, the expansion features 2 new gameplay features, Galactic Command and Uprisings, allowing the players to participate in new battles and expand their influence across the galaxy. And this is a more of an in-depth synopsis. Sometime after the Battle of Odessen, the Outlander, a veteran of the Great Galactic War, leads the Alliance in a battle against Empress Valene as she begins her conquest of the galaxy. Facing some of the biggest threats they have ever encountered, the Outlander and their Alliance discover new worlds and undertake dangerous undercover missions to their fight to take control of the Eternal Throne. What the hell is so funny?
I don't know. It's just something, because I don't know anything about this game. Oh, like, okay. I know what it is, and I've seen a sweet CGI trailer with 2 brothers fighting against each other, with like light and dark.
This is their sister in this trailer.
Oh, is it?
She's like basically like looks like 11 from Stranger Things. If she was grown up and she was like a Sith or whatever. Okay. I don't think they're in the trailer. I don't think she's exactly like a Sith, or she's like a dark side user, and her father's like an evil emperor. The whole thing is, here's the thing: Star Wars: The Old Republic is the only MMO I've actually paid money for and played like for an extended period of time. And this was back, I think the game came out 5 years ago, so 2011. And I had a lot of fun with it. I created 2 different characters. One was a bounty hunter, and the other one was an Imperial agent, who may or may not have been based on Grand Admiral Thrawn. Probably was. And the thing is, I appreciate about the game is that it was an extension of BioWare's Knights of the Republic from 2001, that game. And it was also just an MMO that had a focus on narrative and characters and story. And
BioWare's bread and butter.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I liked it. Now, the game kind of came under fire because, despite having, in my opinion, like a really enjoyable story and really fun characters, the vanilla base, the base game apparently didn't have like a lot of kind of like post campaign stuff afterwards, right? Now, to me, someone who doesn't have a lot of experience with MMOs, like, well, I don't give a shit. I'll just create a new character. That's all I did. But other people were kind of upset about that.
Because you're a filthy casual.
I'm a filthy, horribly filthy casual. And of course, when the game eventually the game went free to play, and then which is usually kind of like a death sentence to a lot of these MMOs. But it's been alive for 5 years, and they consistently started putting out these kind of big story packs. I know one was kind of based on like the Hutt cartels and the gangsters and stuff like that. The other one was based, I think, on Darth Revan, who of course was the protagonist or antagonist, whatever you want to play him in Knights of the Old Republic, or she. Again, the thing is, I just don't have the time to play the game anymore.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
There's so many other games.
There's so many other games, and just my regular life, jobs and just One of Us. I can't dedicate the time to do it. I would love to go back. I wish I had at least 2 hours a day I can play the game, but I just can't. And I'm sad about that. Just from the totally just appreciating like this most recent just trailer as a trailer, I mean, it's beautiful. It's that kind of blur style. Yeah. You got like this, basically it is like Stranger Things where you have this kind of temple guard or whatever the hell she is, like protecting and training this girl who's like the daughter of this evil emperor guy. And again, she turns into this kind of psychopath and, cause she's tortured and imbued with like Sith and dark side magic and stuff. I don't know. It's a great looking trailer. And again, I'm just happy Star Wars is
this was just one of the first times, though. Like, this is why I was laughing. It was just one of the first times where, as you're reading something, as I read it, I was like, I don't know what that is. What's
all this?
What is going on? What are these words? And I was like, man, I'm really out of the loop with MMOs.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I'm out of the loop. I can just appreciate it from just the fact that it looks beautiful and there's lightsabers and force powers. And so I appreciate that. So, I mean, we'll see what happens with this add-on. I'm interested to hear what people think of it, because I don't think neither of us will be playing it.
Do you know how it's standing against other MMOs?
Is it a
pretty well-standing one?
I'm not in the know in regards to that. I imagine that it's... I mean, the fact that they're still developing content for it says something. It's not like it's like...
on the death throes or anything.
Yeah, it's not... I mean, they're still marketing it heavily, and the fact that they got Disney behind it and EA. So, I mean, you got those two big titans right there. I mean, I think they're going to keep making this game. I don't know if it's going to last long as WoW or something like that. Mm-hmm. I imagine this is like a 10-year game, and I think that'll be it. And then, eventually, I think, EA, whoever's going to be developing Star Wars games in the future, because they have that 10-year agreement where they make, or 10-year licensing agreement with Disney, that then they'll start a new RPG that's kind of set in the more modern Star Wars, like, during the Galactic Civil War, after, like, 30 years after, like, during, like, The Force Awakens and things like that. So I think that's when they'll start doing that, but I think it'll be around for at least the next 5 years.
Okay.
Some kind of sad news. Friday the 13th, the game, is delayed to an unspecified date in spring 2017, a developer Gun Media announced on its Kickstarter page. Originally intended to release in 2016, the rescheduling means the studio can work on a single-player experience and offline AI bots, in addition to the multiplayer mode. Spring marks the release of Friday the 13th's multiplayer with playable Tommy Jarvis and a third playable map in Pekanak Lodge. The single-player mode, on the other hand, released summer 2017. Those who have already contributed through the Kickstarter or pre-ordered the game will receive the single-player for free. Everyone else will have to pay an increased digital price of $40. The $60 physical price remains the same. The first thing people are going to read here is delay, studio head Wes Keltner said. We want everyone to be assured that that coming to our decision to delay was no easy matter. We believe that the positives far outweigh the negatives. We've been reading day in and day out on the social media feeds that single player and Tommy Jarvis were in such demand that we couldn't ignore our fans. After securing funding, we've here to tell you that it is reality and that we're making this game even bigger. You don't have to wait until the next release to get your hands on Friday the 13th, however. If you back the game on Kickstarter or pre-ordered it, you'll receive a beta access this year alongside 4 additional beta keys you can give to friends. Now, the Kickstarter page shares more details about the upcoming Twitch streams, recent conventions, and future updates, so you can probably definitely check that out. Also, Friday the 13th, the game received more than $800,000 in crowdfunding campaign at Kickstarter. Its original goal was $700,000, and it met stretch goal to add 3 different kills. The stretch goal for the single-player campaign was $1.625 million. John, first of all, Have you played the Friday the 13th game? Or do you care about it?
So there's a beta.
Yeah, there's currently a beta.
I haven't played it, but yeah. I'm very much interested in this. I think this is kind of cool and a unique thing, but then when you throw out an increased digital price of $40 for one component of your game, that seems weird.
That's the thing. Because I played it. I had the opportunity to play it, and it's fun, but it's extremely repetitive. It's kind of like Evolve. It's like a lesser version of Evolve, where you play as the, you know, you have
Jason is basically the monster.
He's the monster, and then you play as like four other people. It's a 1v4 kind of, a 4v1 type of game. And I like the aesthetic, and even though I'm not a fan of the Friday the 13th franchise, I think it's actually like the worst of the slasher franchises, in my opinion, because it's just like, Jason just fucking sucks. He's just a big dumb brute, and all he uses is a machete. It was fun for what it is. And the thing is, like, I can understand why they're delaying it. Because they want this game to obviously have a longer life. That's why they're delaying it. They're putting in the single player component. They're adding AI bots. I think it's very, very smart. So I imagine you can increase the difficulty and things like that. But yeah, for people who are excited, I think it's disappointing. But again, for those people that originally backed it, you know, you won't have to pay for the single player content, which I think is great. But yeah, I mean, do you have any other thoughts in kind of regards to this?
Yeah, I just. Do 1v4 games, are those a thing? Like, do they really work? Because I don't think they do.
I don't think so. I can't think of one that has been successful yet.
It just doesn't sound... You just have to, like, help... You have to make it really fun to be the one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if anyone's really sort of, you know, achieved that goal. And I think it's more just like, well, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be this person. And then on the other way around, it's just like, well, this is just a regular old multiplayer game. But... You're only... It's horde mode, but with one bad guy.
Yeah, exactly.
In a sense.
It's... Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure that they're going to be able to sell too many copies with it being $60. I just don't believe that. But
also,
still...
it'll be spring.
Yeah.
You ready for slasher films in March?
I don't know. Some people... I mean, is that like Friday the 13th? Is Friday the 13th in March this year or something like that?
No, I think they delayed the reboot movie to October.
Oh,
because it's
right.
And also, that seems like, put it around that movie.
Mm-hmm. You would think it makes sense.
Like, just delay it to around that movie.
Yeah. Well, those people aren't talking to each other, clearly. And I think the filmmakers or the studio behind that film is clearly does not care with the property that they have. But, you know, the thing is, you know, I think Jason would have been a more effective killer had he had, like, a chainsaw attached to a machine gun. I think that would have worked really well for him.
Worn out places, worn out faces. Hide my head, I wanna drown my sorrow. No tomorrow, no tomorrow. And I find it kinda funny, I find it kinda sad. The dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. Find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very mad world.
Raise your hell! Ah, Tom! Ah! That's the thing about Marcus Fenix, is that he has this wonderfully curmudgeonly voice. Of course, you know, famously voiced by the great John DiMaggio, of course, of Bender, of Futurama, and Jake the Dog of Adventure Time. And
that's so crazy.
I'm just glad that he's added to his resume just this totally, like, gruff, the most just angry. He's angry, but he's not a dick about it. He's not like Kratos. He's like, Kratos is just a prick. Like,
His
family is dead. So is Marcus Fenix's family. They're all fucking dead.
Well, not anymore. Now he's got a boy.
Well, yeah, he's got a little boy now in the most recent game. JD.
He just lost his dad.
He did. He lost him twice. He thought he died twice in the franchise. But, so welcome back, everyone. John and I, of course, are with the recent release of Gears of War 4, which John and I are both playing. We're here to talk about the Gears of War franchise. Now, again, I mean, as I said in previous podcasts, I'm a really big fan of Gears of War, especially, all the games, really. I don't think there's a weak game among them. John, are you a big fan of Gears of War?
I have a very interesting sort of relationship with Gears, I think, because it's... I don't really have an affiliation with the game, in a sense. I have affiliation with the person I play the game with. Because... And we can get more into this, but I played the first three Gears games, like the campaigns, with my brother.
Yeah.
Like, that was, like, the thing. I think that was the first game, so 2006, I'm 13, and he is 9.
Okay.
I was like, well, this has a co-op thing. Like, yeah. One of them's Spanish, and it's like, I want to play two-player.
You want to play Dom? Yeah, you a big Dom fan?
I was like,
Maria.
Okay. We'll get into it, but
Maria.
Two is the best.
But just for a little background, for those that don't know about Gears, Gears of War was developed by Epic Games. Cliff Bleszinski, the lead developer, who has previously worked on Epic's Unreal Tournament games, served the series as lead game designer for the first three installments. He was inspired by gameplay elements from Resident Evil 4, Killswitch, and Bionic Commando. The series was also guided by Rod Ferguson, the executive producer and director of development of Epic Games until 2012. All four installments of the Gears of War series use a modified version of the Unreal Engine 3. And since, I think, January of 2014, Microsoft acquired the rights to the franchise from Epic Games, and it's currently being developed and handled by the Coalition, which I think it was a studio called Black Tusk originally before they became the Coalition. They actually had another game in development at the time, which that fucking thing disappeared.
Was that the... was this the company that... was making... No, that's Sledgehammer. I was getting it confused.
It was, yeah.
It was that time where multiple companies were like... had other companies that were going to try their own things. And
they
were like...
an offshoot of Sledgehammer, I want to say.
Yeah, and then they were like, no, just focus on this one franchise. Mm-hmm. Which I really kind of hate. I don't like that. Like, because the Coalition, even its name...
It implies
is
Gears.
Very Gears.
They're the Gears of War studio now.
I don't like that.
I think it's...
I would hate to work for a place like that, where it's like, I know for the rest of my life I'm working on this one franchise.
Yeah. We're getting right into it now. Our appreciation of Gears of War, we're going to start complaining about it. I think it's disappointing that you had this studio, which obviously had another game in production, which I think a trailer was released a number of years ago at one of Microsoft's press conferences. I don't know if it was Fortnite. That's Epic. Whatever game. But... Black Tusk had another game in development. They showed like a very brief teaser of like this kind of spy type of game. That obviously went away, and eventually they started working on Gears. I think it's disappointing when a developer is just forced to drop
a project they probably actually cared about and be like, we want more money here.
Exactly. But, yeah, I mean, just kind of go into that, Gears of War has become like one of the best-selling franchises for Microsoft, specifically on the Xbox 360. I mean, I can see why. To me, it really nailed the formula when it came to third-person cover-based gameplay, which I don't think any game at that time could even match Gears of War. Definitely not. And you've seen that type of gameplay carry over to so many other titles, some lesser, some good, but I don't think there's been a series or a franchise that has managed to match it, Gears of War, in terms of its gameplay. And that's the thing that has always brought me back to the franchise. We'll get into the story in a minute, but really, the reason why I think Gears of War has continued to be a success is because of the things that you're able to do. And who doesn't want to attach a chainsaw to a machine gun and to eviscerate enemies and then to use a shotgun, which, again, the loading mechanic in the games, I love that. That loading, it's so satisfying. You just feel like every time you
get it right in the middle.
Yeah, right in the middle, a little white bar. And you get the super powerful ammo and just blowing a locust enemy away, wherever the fuck the monster creatures are, and it just explodes into like viscera and just blood and gore. I love it. I mean, that's what has always brought me back to the Gears of War franchise. So
I remember hearing stories about Cliffy B, which on the one hand we should talk about him for a little bit, but
yeah.
Him fighting for that chainsaw bayonet. Mm-hmm. I think at the time when the game was coming out, they did like a little small docuseries that I remember watching.
Yeah.
About him, like, you know, right before they're showing it and all the pressure about it, and it was the first time I kind of understood like what game developers did on a day-to-day basis.
And it's
how
hard. Yeah.
Yeah, and how big, you know, a success things can be, and like when that pays off, it pays off. But like, there's a lot of sleeping at your desk, like 20-hour days. Also just like how hard it is to get something that you think is iconic as a player, but like at the times, other people were just like, "No, don't put that in there. It's stupid." Mm-hmm. But like, don't know. It was just chainsaw bayonets. That's what Gears of War is to be.
The gun is actually called the Lancer. I just remembered it at the top of my head. But yeah, but Cliff Bleszinski, really one of, I think, the most famous modern game developers. Certainly one of the most well-respected within the industry. Of course, is he currently with Epic? No, he's still with Epic, correct?
Or no? I thought he went on to retire for a little bit.
You're right. Yeah, he had retired. I think he left Epic, and I think he started a new studio, I want to say, at the top of my head.
Yeah, I think so.
But I mean,
as they all do.
Yeah, as this typically happens when you get so big, you want to.
You want to do
Gears Forever, of course.
That goes back to what I was saying. It's just like eventually, as an artist, you want to expand your horizons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think stuff being titled like The Coalition is just
kind of... Yeah. I mean, yeah, I can understand that. But certainly, Cliff Bleszinski, the fact that he kind of had to fight for the Lancer against
is crazy.
It is ridiculous. It's one of the most iconic weapons in video games today.
That was one of the big selling points for me in Gears 1 is like, I'm going to hold B and run up on this guy and he's just going to tear him from the inside. It's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, do you want to start talking about like kind of like all the first games?
Well, I did want to mention real quick on Cliffy B, what I wanted to say was you don't see many superstar developers. And I think for that moment, for the 2006 to... just before Gears 3, I think...
2011,
I think Gears...
Certainly Western developer.
I think Cliffy B was, like, this dude. This big dude that I think... Even the occasional mainstream person were like, oh, yeah, I know who made Gears. Like, because he's got even that, like, marketable nickname, Cliffy B.
Yeah, it's
And then you start seeing people like a Jade Raymond show up, and it's, like, another company trying to put a face in front of their franchise. And I think it was... I don't know. You don't even see it that often today. Like the people of old, like a Tim Schafer or Ken Levine, people like them. But that was pre this era. And I think the old 80s style have those people. And then the only ones from the mid aughts is I can only really think of Cliffy B. Maybe Todd Howard
for Bethesda. For Fallout and Elder Scrolls and things like that.
That's kind of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's. I think it's harder in this day and age with so many franchises, it's really hard for one person to kind of, you know, own it from the beginning and kind of continue to lead it. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that was interesting that he's one of the few that in that era I can remember. So.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, he has continued to have a huge influence on that series and just games as a whole. But yeah, just kind of get into like the first Gears of War game. Of course, it came out in 2006. It was to me the game that put the Xbox 360 on the map. I think that's for a lot of people. And even before the game's release, you have probably the most iconic, or one of the most iconic video game commercials of all time.
One of my favorites.
With Mad World. I forget the band name, but who...
Oh, we'll go in. Yeah. Well, it'll be the lead-in song.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, just that image where you're going through this kind of apocalyptic type environment where it's like this urban environment that's like crumbling in on itself, and that song that starts playing, and like Marcus Fenix is running down the alley, and all of a sudden he goes like this super like this warehouse or whatever type building, and it's completely black, just pitch black, and of course then you see all the monsters like eyes, the locusts, and their various horrible monstrous creatures.
What was that one called? The like tarantula-esque one is the one you see because
crawlers?
It's crawlers because. You're like running from locusts, and then
yes, exactly, yeah.
And then you pull into a abandoned building,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then behind you, the lights come on, and so I just love the way like the song's playing, but the way it fades out too is just Marcus like spraying, bullets, and it fades out to just like I think it does this again with Gears 2.
That trailer's awesome.
Just like you're definitely like on your back, mm-hmm. like you're going to die sort of situation, and I kind of love that. About it. It makes everything feel like this is it. This is like last ditch efforts, which is, I think, what the franchise is all about. Mm-hmm. Like the the last ditch effort of humanity, and like you're on your heels the whole time.
Yeah, just give like a little kind of like background on just the history of Gears of War. It takes place on the planet Sera, which is basically like an Earth type environment where there are humans and things like that, and where this planet has been engulfed in like a war for, I think, like a decades, like just fighting with each other over this type of resource called emulsion, which is basically oil.
Yeah.
Of course, there's eventually a peace between these warring nations, and they kind of establish the COG, the Coalition, I think, of Gears. or governments, whatever the fuck it's called, the COG. They're called the COG. But then eventually, of course, these horrible, monstrous mole people just shoot out of the ground. And they're called the Locust. And they basically, their one objective is to wipe out humanity. And the first game starts out where you're playing as Marcus Fenix, who was a veteran of the Pendulum Wars, and who eventually, I think, was in prison because he disobeyed orders trying to save his father. Yada, yada, yada. You're rescued by your best friend, Dom Santiago. And, of course, then you eventually meet up with several other famous characters in the series. Damon Baird, who's probably my favorite of the COGs, because he's very sarcastic and very pragmatic. And also, arguably, probably the most beloved Gears of War character, Coltrane. Woo, baby!
That moment, I think we'll get to it. He has a great moment in, I think, 3.
Oh, yes, he does. He's a great moment in all the games. But yeah, definitely in 3, but... And the first game just kind of follows Delta Squad, composed of Marcus Fenix, Dom, Baird, and Cole, as they try to fight back against kind of the Locust Horde using this kind of nuclear weapon called a light mass bomb. And the thing about the Gears franchise, and maybe just specifically this game, is that the story is not good. It's not a very good story, but I love the world, particularly because, not to get too off topic, but... They actually, in the Xbox 360 release of Gears of War, they cut out an entire chapter. Yeah, where it's like, suddenly you go from, like, you're in this underground facility fighting the Locust or whatever, and then you're like, oh, we gotta get the bomb. It's like, wait, what the fuck happened? what bomb? But just to go into, I think the Gears of War has struggled when it comes to storytelling and certainly dialogue, but you said something I think is important, that I think what makes it compelling in those campaigns, compelling, not because they're just wonderful to play and they're beautiful to look at, and especially with the first one, is just that it feels like that kind of you're constantly on your back type of story, where this is a latch-ditch effort, and where you're surrounded by these four guys who are kind of not, they're not bros, they're really not. I don't even describe them. People have kind of attributed, like, oh, they're the bros. They're really not. They're kind of just like these soldiers who have just been through hell, and they have all these really unique personalities that make them different, and I think make them work well together.
Yeah, and it's... I also have never really felt that Marcus and Baird ever get along, really. Like, I don't... No. I think they're just,
they
like...
They get better as the games progress. One, they don't like each other, but I think even by the end of one, I think they're...
I know, but that's what I'm saying. It's just like, it doesn't feel like bros, because the only ones who feel like really good friends to me ever were Dom and Marcus.
Yeah, and I would say even Coltrane and Baird are actually best friends.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like two separate teams.
Exactly. Well, they kind of go off on their own a lot. Cole and Baird. but yeah, I mean, what was your experience with just the first Gears game? Because to me, it was, for a while, my favorite game on the Xbox 360.
Okay, so I'm looking back through...
Gears of War history? Is it the coalition of governments?
Oh, yeah, it is the coalition.
I was right, okay.
2006, first off, for the Xbox 360.
Yes, what yes.
A solid year. Mm-hmm. We had a Burnout Revenge. Mm-hmm. We had a Elder Scrolls 4, Oblivion, which was actually the first game where I was like, oh, okay. I get it. I get what these consoles are for.
I actually hate that game. We'll go into that to another.
What you do?
A time. At the time, I thought it was like, this is amazing, but like a plane that I don't want to get into it right now. Okay. You know, I have problems with that game.
We also had Dead Rising that year. Prey, okay. Saints Row, beginning of some franchises. Yeah, Fear. Yeah.
Fear.
Yeah. Sonic the Hedgehog of 2016.
What the fuck you mentioned that for? What are you even doing?
And Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Piece. But anyway, yeah, Gears.
Good year.
Gears. Out of all those, just next to Oblivion, they're the two that stand out the most to me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of weird to think about, because Gears, at its core, is just a shooter. And I never really think about. There's more to it, but I never really think about shooters being up there as something I remember. I don't give a shit about Halo. I'll say that right now. Mm. Like, I think Halo is weak-ass sauce.
Mm. I like Halo.
I like Call of Duty. Like, the gameplay's fun. It's a fun land game.
I get
game,
what you're saying. Yeah,
but it's
I
like,
understand.
I have no... I don't care who messes.
Yeah, you're not alone. You're not alone.
Call of Duty, I don't remember the stories. I only like 4. Soap. 4 is the only good story.
Mm-hmm. Soap's a guy. Yeah.
Captain Price with his sweet-ass mustache.
Oh, wonderful. We are leaving!
Let's see. I don't remember anything about Battlefield. I just...
Bad Company.
Fear... Yeah, Bad Company solid, but Fear has cool experiments. But, like, Gears... I do actually come back to each game because it's like, well, I want to know what's going to happen to Marcus and Dom.
Yeah.
Well, not Dom anymore, Dom. But like Maria. I think that's interesting that a shooter actually achieved that.
You actually know these characters by name, which in the other shooters you don't. You know, that's the thing.
Yeah, other than Captain Price, Soap McTavish.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of it. Soap McTavish.
Call of Duty 4 is like the greatest shooter of all time.
One of the best first-person shooters.
Yeah, but like a third-person shooter, even then, it's I don't really remember much of them either.
I think the reason why that might be is because I think just so many games since 2006 have copied the Gears of War gameplay formula. It's cover-based. I mean, I can't think of any that like even like a lesser game, which still is
Grand Theft Auto 4. Yeah, think about it. It uses it poorly, shittily.
Yeah, yes, it does. But like even like Spec Ops: The Line, which is a game which a lot of people should play. I think that should be a game. I think we should talk about in the future. Just review like a retro game or whatever. But it has a great story. But it borrows. It's the Gears of War gameplay to a T. Mm-hmm. It's almost obnoxious how similar it is. You know, just to that gameplay. And there's so many other franchises use it. And maybe that's why it doesn't stand out now, but at the time...
Like the gameplay was,
it definitely did.
No, yeah, because I can't remember pre-2006 anything that played like that. And I'm trying to really rack my brain.
Nothing.
I was like, how do third-person shooters work before the cover stuff? Mm-hmm. Like,
exactly, it's crazy. You just stood there, you just took bullets.
It doesn't make it... You had to, like, manually just, like, stand behind a wall.
Yeah.
And side
shuffle.
That's
ridiculous just to think about that. Yeah, there are games that exist like that. Jesus Christ. But, I mean, yeah, for the first Gears game... It remained my favorite of the original Xbox 360 games for a long time, with the exception of the story, which is dumb. I like the characters, I like the world and the environments, and I thought that they really upped the ante with Gears of War 2, which I don't...
It's my favorite.
It's hard for me to think which... I mean, really, it's hard for me to pick which Gears game is my favorite, but I think it might be 2 for me. And just because it continues on after the events of the first game, obviously, we're with, Marcus, Dom, Baird, and Cole again, and where the Locust Horde is, of course, you know, the light mass bomb, it definitely hurt them, but they're far from out, where kind of humanity has coalesced around this one remaining city, Jacinto. Yeah. And the only reason why that city hasn't fallen, because for whatever reason, cities around the planet are, like, sinking to the ground, and they don't know why. The Cog don't know why. And that part of the game is you kind of solving this mystery, and then also, what I think this game does really well is that it explores the Locusts more and their history and like what they may or may not be. There's a lot of hints at like how they came to be, which I think is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. And
they have like a queen. Is that hinted at in this one? Right?
The queen. Mm-hmm. Actually, the queen does show up. That's the thing. In the first game, you only hear the queen through like dialogue. You're like, oh, there's a Locust queen. For whatever reason, then in Gears of 2, you meet her, and she's really hot, actually. looks nothing
because,
like
because
her weird monster locust creatures.
We can't have women in games.
So or mole like... people. I guess that's true. that's kind of sad. In the game, what I do like about it is that you explore very different types of environments in the first game, where you're underground for a good part.
You kind of take it to them.
You do. You take the fight to them. Fight. But I had a brain fart, right? I didn't want to talk about fighting. But no, and those underground environments are unique because they're not just like it's all gray and brown and black. It's like no, it's like these environments are really like colored with all different types of like creatures and like neon blue and greens and reds and really unique environments. And you get to like kind of see like the Locust architecture and things like that. And it's like wow, these people actually these monster horrible creatures have a society. It's a horrible society. You know they're enslaving people. And of course, you have that iconic moment with Dom and his wife.
Dude, like, I know you're joking, but it's like, I think that's why I like Gears 2 the most is, one, it refines the gameplay.
Yeah.
One is a little rough when you go back to it. It doesn't have the things.
It's a little stiffer.
Yeah, it's a little stiffer. You get mechanics like the meat shield and the chainsaw duels, which I think are really cool added mechanics. I think it's 2 where you can stick grenades on the wall, right?
Yeah, it's 2.
Which I think is a big thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it traps, especially in multiplayer.
It changes the gameplay for me. Mm-hmm. It has those two big moments for me is when Dom meets his wife, and it's like, at first it looks like everything's normal, and then you realize, like, oh, no, he's kind of losing his mind.
Dom, look at her, Jesus Christ!
He's kind of losing his mind.
Yeah.
And I forgot, does Dom have to kill her?
Oh yeah,
forgot that.
Well, Dom, Marcus is like, hey Dom, I gotta go over here, so you take care of this, all right? All right. And then Marcus walks away, and then he hears the gunshot.
And Dom is just, out of both of them, Dom has always seemed like the more sensitive one. So because he's fighting for it, like, specifically for his wife. And so it's just, I don't know, that moment had a lot of emotional impact, and it was kind of weird. I think it also plays into the fact that this was no longer, like, of course the white man is the lead in the game, but, like, Dom is pretty, like, close by at all times. And it,
he's always with Marcus.
Yeah, and there's never, there at that point in time, there wasn't really many Hispanic characters. So I think as a Hispanic person at that time, always been a Hispanic person.
You're still
always
will be at the time, what were you? Were you?
What I mean, like, what, 2008, so.
Yeah.
15.
You're right, sorry.
So like 15, 16, prime and angsty adolescence. So like having any sort of character in gaming that like I could associate with. So emotional Hispanic man, like having to do that. And then right after that is a scene because they add characters like Dizzy and
Ty.
That's what I'm talking about. Where Ty gets captured.
That scene freaked me out.
He's like, that you finally get him, but he's all like fucked up.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's gonna be okay. And he's like, okay, let's go fight. Hand him the gun, and immediately just kills himself. I was like, okay. Yeah. Like, that's an actually really emotionally intense moment. And it gets across the fact that, like, these Locust characters are fucked up and fuck you up. And not just physically, but mentally, you realize how, like, distraught and lost humanity is at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how some people are just like, no, I'd rather just tap out. I'm done.
It is. Now, in regards to the Maria scene, the problem I had with it is just because I just didn't get to know that character whatsoever. She's only seen, I think, in one flashback, and Dom talks about her occasionally. That's the thing about Dom, is that he and his wife had, like, two children who died, I think, on E-Day or something like that. And I would have liked to have just, I don't know, that, it's like it's an important emotional moment for that character, but I just didn't think it was executed all that well. And I think the dialogue was just, I don't know, it didn't really
The dialogue
work
is
for
never
me.
Great in this game.
No, it's also just to be fun, fun, goofy, kind of B-movie dialogue.
Yeah.
And it works for that, but then when you get to these super kind of serious emotional moments, it's like, this isn't really working. So
I think, like I said, for me, I think it was just that emotional attachment I already
sure,
put
for,
on
for
to
Dom.
Dom. So, like, because it has nothing to do necessarily with Maria. It's more just like, I understand that Dom is very, like, distressed, and that at this point going forward, he's fighting now for a weird reason. And does he even know why he's fighting in by Gears 3? It's like, does he actually even know why he's fighting anymore?
And that kind of goes into Gears 3. Well, I just want to mention Giant Worm in Gears of War 2. Isn't that so much fun? Where you're in a giant worm and you gotta fight and battle and you gotta cut its heart out.
Yeah.
With your chainsaw, Vena. No, I think not only one heart, I think it has like five hearts or something ridiculous.
Yeah. You gotta extend that axe.
Such a goofy, gory moment. I love it. Oh, I completely forgot to mention Carmine. The Carmine brothers in all the Gears of War games. So in the original Gears of War, you're introduced to, I think there's like three or four Carmine brothers. And the first one, I think, is like Anthony Carmine.
Yeah, because it's ABC or something.
ABC, Anthony Carmine. And the running joke in the Gears of War franchise is all the Carmine brothers die in horrible ways. In the first game, Anthony Carmine is shot in the head by a sniper. In this game, when you go into the worm, you discover, I think, what's his name?
Benjamin
Carmine is being, like, digested inside the worm's stomach when you meet him. And it's just like, oh my god, poor bastard. And he's a nice guy. He's like, that's the thing. None of the Carmine brothers are like assholes or anything. They're all like really nice people. But
and I think that also played into Gears 3, where they set up the thing with the Xbox avatars. Mm-hmm. And also you could vote, like, does the third Carmine get to live?
Clay Carmine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that kind of just carries in, and we'll talk about Clay Carmine in a second, because I'm actually happy what they did with his character. But going on in the Gears of War 3, where it takes place, I think, almost close to 2 years after the events of Gears of War 2, where at the end of Gears of War 2, you basically flood the whole Locust.
The hollow,
with, like, assault water, basically, you know, destroying, like, significant amount of the infrastructure of the Locust kind of society. And of course you haven't, like, encountered the Locust for some time. You're actually on all these ships because all the cities are fucking gone at this point. There's nothing left, really. And you're kind of Marcus and Dom and Baird Cole, you're separated from the COG. And then, of course, eventually you're told by a Prescott, who's like this fascist leader who would control the cog at the time, that, no, look, I was involved in the secret project. Your father is still alive. He's developing this super weapon to kill all the Locusts. And, of course, not only that, but you're also dealing with a new enemy called the Lambit, which you are first introduced in Gears of War 2, which are these like kind of grotesque zombie-like Locust creatures that have been exposed to emulsion. I think this game, of all of them, probably has the best story, because it's closing the door to the trilogy. It's the final chapter, and I think a lot of the stuff from the previous games has paid off in regards to certain characters and how we see, particularly I think like Dom and his story. And I also like that how it was Epic's best effort to really tie like a lot of these emotional connections between all their characters, particularly I think between Marcus and Anya. Anya, of course, who has been featured in the... She's like the person who speaks to you over your little headset and is like giving you intel. Here, and that's the other thing, Gears of War 3 introduces a lot of like female characters that you can play as. I think, Anya, and I forget the other one on top of my head, I don't remember. But she's also, I think she's also a minority character, I want to say. I think Gears of War 3, it's weird. It's like I always debate which one of my favorites is, either Gears of War 3 or Gears of War 2. I think Gears of War 3 is by far the best multiplayer. But I just appreciate Gears of War 3 a lot because it was that... I thought they did a really good job of ending that story.
Yeah, I don't...
You're not a fan?
It's fine.
Yeah.
I just don't remember it as well. Which I think is odd to say about something that I'd spent at that point 5 years with, and I don't really remember the finale. I remember Dom dying.
Fight the Queen.
Dom dies. I remember thinking the Lambert were stupid. I remember Cole has a wonderful moment in the stadium. I thought that was...
Thrashball.
That's like such a good character beat.
It is.
Such a good character.
So I think they ended a lot of these character arcs, their stories. Really.
I don't remember what happens to Baird.
Is
he fine?
I
assume he's fine.
He's sarcastic, and he gets together with that other minority character I can't remember.
Okay, so some good personal growth.
And he's not as negative all the time.
I don't remember what happens to Marcus's dad. Is he fine?
No, he dies.
He dies.
He's alive in this game, right? Well, you find out he's alive in the game. He's been developing a super weapon to kill the Locust.
I remember all that stuff.
Yeah, it's like this giant like blast. I don't know. It encompasses the world. It's like this giant wave.
That's how it ends. You like put up the wave. I forgot.
And he's been testing
the
device.
The queen or something.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You fight the queen at the end when she's on a giant bug creature and she's all, stop killing all my people. It's like, no, I know. I want to kill all your people. That's how Marcus talks. And his father dies because he's exposed himself to like Locust stuff.
I remember you pushing the button that makes the thing explode and all the Locusts are finally dead. And then you sit on the corner of the beach.
Yeah.
Or something. You sit on a corner and everyone's like, well, I guess we can start life now.
start life anew. I think what I liked about Gears of War 3, I just remembered right now off the top of my head, at the time was like, I didn't actually feel comfortable killing the Locust. Like, destroying their entire race.
Yeah, they did kind of have, like, come back full circle where it's just like, these characters, like, have feelings, weirdly.
They have feelings that they're, even though they're, you know, monsters, as you learn in Gears of War 2, the Locusts were probably humans at one time, but they were experimented on by one of the coalition governments, the COG. And these patients escaped the facility. They went underground for whatever reason. And they managed to breed, apparently, a lot. And they became these, what we see them in the franchise, the Locusts. I don't know to what extent how the Queen got involved.
Yeah, I was going to say, was it ever hinted at that was Marcus's mom?
I think it might have been hinted at.
I think that's what bothers me about Gears 3. I think some things are dropped.
You're probably right.
Because I don't remember where the Queen thing went, because I don't really think it went anywhere.
It didn't. It kind of ended where, you basically kill her.
And then they like just replace it with the Lambent, because they're like, well,
yeah,
we need something else. Which they're reminded me of that bullshit Halo did with the Flood.
Yeah. Well, all these games have like the Flood.
I just hate when you introduce a third tertiary villain that you're just like,
we need to do something different.
We need to do something different. So here, and this one glows.
They glow. Well, you can see them. They can see them coming. But no, actually, you know what? You're probably. I think Gears of War 2 is my favorite because you just brought up a good point. It's like, yes, a lot of the plot in this game feels like it's unfinished. Like they stopped writing it in regards to the Queen. Like I always thought, like maybe she had been human the whole time. You know, because she's the most human looking. There's no other female Locust from what I can see. Maybe they breed like orcs. They just you know, they birth them just naturally. Like, maybe they're asexual. But, yeah, in regards to the Queen, it's like, yeah, her story feels like it wasn't finished at all. And I think that was frustrating for her. I think where I thought a lot of the, they closed, where I thought Gears of War 3 did a good job of closing a lot of the character stories, just the overarching kind of, like, plot of, like, okay, you're going to answer these questions, they obviously didn't. They kind of pulled a loss to a certain extent where they chose not to answer some of the stuff, which I think that's kind of frustrating. But at the same time, I think the game still has some really memorable moments. I think the gameplay, again, is so good. I mean, I even love, like, when you're on the ship and you're kind of exploring the area with, you know, how humans have struggled so much now that they just have societies on all these really weird and different locations. But, yeah, of course, in regards to Carmine, the third Carmine brother, Clay Carmine, first of all, I want to ask, did you vote to kill him or to let him live?
I probably voted to kill him.
God, you are... Why, you're bloodthirsty.
Well, like...
A bloodthirsty Batman and a bloodthirsty Gears of War player.
Well, like, to me, it was like, I want consistency.
You want consistency like that.
They all can be in heaven together.
Yeah, okay.
That was their real happy.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. I voted to let him live. And...
He did live.
And right? Clay Carmine did, in fact, sir, although they hinted...
They do bait and switch?
They do.
Did like, he, like, fake die or something?
Yeah, it's like he dies in a helicopter crash. But then at the end when you're on the beach, as you said before, you kind of, the camera cuts to like a helmet on the ground, like a COG helmet. And of course, it's picked up and it's Clay Carmine. You can recognize him because he has like specific tattoos on his arm and stuff like that. So it's like, oh yeah, he survived. So I was happy about that. I'm like, listen, one of them's got to live. They're parents. It's like they lost all their sons and now they only got one left. But now moving on to probably... In my opinion, a really underrated game in general, which is Gears of War Judgment. This was, of course, it was the fourth installment in the series, and it came out in 2012. And it was not developed by Epic at the time. I think it was, what the fuck were they called? Not Skybound, but...
Skyrocket.
I forget what... Yeah, but it was a different developer. Yeah, yes, exactly.
It still says Epic Games.
Was it Epic Games? Maybe they published it. But I thought it was like a different...
Oh, People Can Fly.
People Can Fly, that's it.
They help.
Thank you. Yes, exactly. Of course, they are probably known for also making like Bulletstorm and things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Gears of War Judgment is actually a prequel to the events of all the previous Gears games, and where it follows Damon... You play his majority of the game as Damon Baird, who leads his squad to kind of battle this Locust general. And of course, it introduces two new characters who I actually really, really like, which is Garen Paddock, who is like this Russian. Technically, he's not Russian, but he totally is. And where he was from, like a different type of government around the world who fought against the COG. And also Sophia Hendrick, who is also voiced by the same voice actress who does Lyara from Mass Effect.
That's why you love this game so much. Yeah. Got some sort of Mass Effect tie.
But I like this game because I think it's just is it familiar? Is it doing the same things? Yeah, but it's still good. And I think it has it expands on these characters, introduces I got to take a drink of water.
I think it stutters because of
like me?
Fatigue. It has a lot to do with... We were just kind of tired at that point. I don't think Gears of War really evolved their gameplay style enough to warrant four games in 7 years.
Yeah.
I forgot...
Did you play it?
No. I watched my little brother play it, and I think I might have played some multiplayer just because my little brother, like I said, he was kind of... 4 years younger than me, but he was kind of raised on the Gears franchise, I think, was the first big franchise where I finally was like, you can play with me, you can play games.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I think he kind of has a connection to Gears of War as well, so he did get Judgment, and I remember him saying the multiplayer was actually, like, some of the best that
multiplayer is fantastic. A lot of competitive and cooperative.
Yeah, he was just like, it finally, like, it's really good. It, like, has come together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because I remember other people were boo-booing on it, and I remember
it was ridiculous.
He got it. I think I was already off at school, and I come back, and I'm like, I thought that game was bad. He's like, no, it's really good.
This game has a bad rap. I'm sorry, but there was... I don't understand. There's always a whatever entry in a franchise that people just want to kind of harp on and just... Really show like, oh, this is it's not a bad game whatsoever. It's familiar, yeah. And maybe that will bore players who maybe I'm sure people who are not fans of Gears of War will definitely not like Judgment because it's just continuing on that formula. And it's a prequel story, and again, it introduces. I like that they introduce all these new characters. I really like Garen. I really like Sophia. Of course, you got to see a young Coltrane, who is just as
exuberant.
Thank you. Yeah, as ever. And again, I like that the fact that I get to play as Baird, who is my favorite character. I think he's just funny. I like him. He's sarcastic, and it shows that. It kind of sets up why he may have been so curmudgeonly towards Marcus Fenix, because he was leader of his own squad at the time, and where he had to make a tremendous sacrifice in judgment, where he basically cost his entire career as a cog. I mean, he was only there because of the fact, we're not going to basically throw you in prison because you managed to complete your mission, but you're never going to be ranked any higher than you are right now. And we're actually going to demote you. So I can understand why that established his kind of pessimistic attitude. And maybe that answered some questions who had complained about him in the past. But I think Judgment, again, it's great gameplay. Multiplayer is, again, so good. Probably the best of the series. I haven't played Judgment, or not, excuse me, 4's multiplayer yet, but very, very impressive. And I think it is a fun story. This is a fun romp. That's all it is.
I do want to talk about multiplayer in general.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
I think that's an important thing to
talk
about. It's tough.
It is, yeah.
It is very hard.
There's a huge learning curve.
I have the most fun around the Xbox era with Gears. Mm-hmm. Call of Duty 4, of course. But also Gears like played a role there. Gears 1 was really good, and this was pre-party chat. This is pre-party chat, so you had to like actually you could communicate with people on your team.
Yeah,
and it's like I had a lot of fun doing that and getting much better at the game as I went along. But the thing about Gears is it's nowhere near pick up and play.
No,
because I remember playing Gears 1, taking a year off, and I was like, oh well, I'm gonna play a little Gears again. Yeah. Getting back in and getting one kill, it's dying 8 times,
brutal, and especially because the way people use how shotguns are in this game. It's really unbalanced where people, this game is just played where you run up to someone and shooting them as quick as you can with the shotgun. Yeah. And they just burst in the gore. I mean, that's how that most of the time multiplayer is played. Or the grenades, which everyone has. You always go to those frag grenades on the map because then it's like, oh, you're going
to, I think that's dominate. Why like 2 eventually felt more balanced out. Like there's things you have to watch out for. You can't just run because there could be a grenade there. And they balance out the shotguns a little bit, where the Lancer actually has some sort of role to it. I prefer the Hammer Burst because it's an actual good weapon.
I fucking hate the Hammer Burst.
I think it's a solid weapon. Yeah. I can't use the Lancer for shooting. I can only use it for melee.
Really?
Yeah. And then going into 4, just a quick preview, I really like their little submachine gun. They have a little submachine gun, Enforcer. Yep. But man, it's a little sporadic-y. Like, it's very spray and pray.
It's kind of...
I still suck at it, though. I suck at Gears.
I mean, it's such a... It's a small little, a handheld machine gun. I mean, that's kind of consistent with what the weapon should be like, I think. But, yeah, just my initial thoughts of just Gears of War 4, which, again, are very, very limited, because I've only played probably, an hour of the game so far. I really enjoy it. Again, it's... If anything I can say is that it's definitely the same formula, to a certain extent. Things feel a little smoother, a little quicker. In regards to the characters, I like JD. I think he's funny. He's very different from his father. He's not as gruff and curmudgeonly. He's very much like Anya in a lot of ways.
Right? Oh, so is that the mom? I never found
out. Yeah, Anya is his mother.
Okay,
They married after Gears of War 3, at least they had a kid after Gears of War 3. But yeah, I like JD. The other two characters, I can't remember their names off the top of my head. I'll know them eventually.
The minority characters?
The minority. Are you happy about that?
One's a woman and one's... Is he black or Hispanic or...
I think he's black. Okay. I'm going to say he's black.
I don't know. I've only seen... I actually,
racist John.
I bought Gears of War 4 really kind of knowing nothing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I didn't watch any previews. I was just like, I like playing Gears again. I think it's time because I skipped Judgment, so it's been 5 years.
Yeah, so it's been a long time.
Yeah, so like, I was like, I guess I'm ready for a Gears game now. Mm-hmm, like, it's about time.
Yeah.
And kind of the opposite with Call of Duty. I don't give a shit about Infinite Warfare.
No, I mean, I was hankering for a Gears of War game just because, I mean, kind of similar to Doom, where I just want a game, it's just pure gameplay. Yeah, you got the story involved, but I just want something to, I just like, it's so just fun to play. And Gears, again, it's just fun to play, and it's carried over to Gears of War 4. I mean, so far, outside of just the gameplay, it's beautiful looking. So good. I mean, is it like Uncharted 4 level? No, of course not. So few games are. But for this particular entry in the series, it's definitely the prettiest of them all. And the other thing I love is just even more curmudgeonly Marcus Fenix has returned. And he's basically a Clint Eastwood. He's like, hello, James. I told you not to join the cog. Ah! Razor hail. But yeah, I think Gears of War has been consistently just a really fun franchise. Oh, and I think people want to play the first Gears of War game. There's actually an anniversary edition that was released on the Xbox One, which I have played, and it is very, very good. And they actually include the missing level that was included in the PC release of the game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do also, like, this is a quick thing, and I'll probably dig into it a little more on the review when we, because eventually
review. Yeah, Gears we'll review. 4. Eventually. It'll be a while.
But Gears of War 4 comes with all of the games. The one I got.
Oh, does this come with 1, 2, 3?
And Judgment.
Really?
It comes with 4 games in it.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's, I mean, well, that just kind of shows you the dedication that I think Microsoft still has to this franchise. And they show that we still care about it.
Yeah.
Whereas I think maybe they kind of mess up with Halo 5 to a certain extent. They're like, okay, we need to bring our
A-game. I totally forgot about Halo 5. Is it even called 5? Or is it Guardians?
It's Halo 5 Guardians.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a sucky Halo game. I'll give you that.
I just don't like Halo. I like Gears
of War. But you like Gears of War, and I think everyone should definitely take the opportunity to play the series.
Ah, shit!